This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're doing 9 to 5. And if you haven't seen it, you must not have been alive in the 80s. Then you might want to pass on this one, and we will see you next time.
Are you ready
for one dry kiss? Woo!
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cozy, irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where this episode we're putting the, taking out the rom, putting in a couple extra coms.
Yes, and there's no kisses.
Because there's no kisses.
And no dry kisses, no kisses.
And doing 9 to 5 during, and the land of the brave, Freedom July.
Is that the whole name, or did we decide that's the whole name?
No, it's Freedom July.
Okay. Sure. Yeah. I know, but I was like, you just added that little flourish in the beginning. I was like, okay. And the home of the brave playball.
Yes.
Boom, 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 boom. Those are my fireworks.
I loved your fireworks. They were incredible.
Got a lot of experience living next to Disneyland because I hear them all the time, like every day.
Well, I'm here with my co-host who, baby, you're a firework, Miss Tamara Cosio.
And I am here with a girl I wouldn't mind putting overtime in with, Corinne Edding.
Woo! Thank you. Same, same.
You're welcome. You'd be my work bestie.
Look, I know that you'd have my back, and I would definitely have yours, so mm-hmm. You'd be worth it.
Of course I would. Psh. We are so glad to be back with you, gentle listeners. We had a not relaxing holiday off.
Correct. Very much correct.
Let's see what happened to me. I had Larry's birthday, my birthday. I moved into Larry's apartment, so we're living together now. That was real, real fun. And I had a Father's Day barbecue. I had a graduation party, Screech's graduation. I've been just real, real busy. I still haven't even had time to like completely move in. Half of my stuff is still in the garage, and I might stay there for a while, and I'm okay with that. Corinne, how was your vacation?
You're cool. You're very cool. You're relaxed. I get it. I get it.
I'm so relaxed. Can't you see? Because you can completely see all the whites of my eyes right now.
You look like you've been Botoxed.
No, that's just stress.
Well, you know, I took some time off of work and I went on a trip for the second anniversary of my sister's death. Yay! With my parents.
Oh, nice. So.
Yeah, we went on a little tribute trip to Ashland. Actually, I would say it's the one family trip we've taken together that was like 100% mutual, something that she was interested in doing. So,
oh,
yeah, because we actually, all four of us went to Ashland together a few years ago. So I had a good time with my parents. I had some centering breathing that I did as well with my parents.
Or because of your parents.
You know, it's just like when you travel with people, you don't get to do things on your own time schedule. There's compromises that get made with, you know, whoever you're with. It doesn't matter if it's your parents or anyone. It's just, that's just the way it works. And so, yes, compromises were made, but I was super happy. We ended up being able to arrange seeing my mom's bestie, who about a month prior had been in the hospital, didn't know if he was going to live or not. So it was nice that she was able to actually connect with him because he lives up in Oregon. So
your mom has a male bestie? I've never heard of this guy.
Yes. His name is Tom, and he's very tall, and his wife is very short. And he is like a super duper duper nice guy. And so he ended up having a fall, hurt his back, needed back surgery. Then when they went to do the back surgery, he had so much scar tissue from a previous surgery that other stuff needed to be done. And it was like this whole hoo-ha. And then there was sepsis, and it was just like a whole landslide of badness where he was put in a medically induced coma. And
fun. Yeah.
And so I was like, I bet my mom would really like to see him.
How'd they meet?
They taught at the same school for a while.
Oh,
yeah.
That's sweet.
And so they had rooms that were like catty corner from each other. It was one of those like big rectangles that were split into four sections. Like you could pull back the dividers and it's like, oh, another classroom right there. And so he was on the diagonal from her.
I can hear the fireworks as we speak. Aww. Gentle listeners, in honor of our Freedom Month, I made a special arrangement with Disneyland so they would pour off fireworks right now, right as we started the podcast. You're welcome.
We're so popular. Disneyland is like, you know what we want to do for you? Baby, you're a firework. Mm-hmm. Yes.
God, I feel out of practice. I got to get my podcasting chops back into shape, Corinne.
Woo. All right, let's do this. Do you have a synopsis for us?
Yes, been waiting for a long time to get to this synopsis because we spent a good 5 or 6 minutes recording before Corinne realized she didn't press record.
Oh my God. Out of practice.
But she rightfully said, best time to figure out you didn't press record is at the beginning of the podcast, right? And I was like, yes. Absolutely. Oh, that's fitting. So I'm like, round two, ding, ding. I do have a synopsis, Corinne. I do. Or I put in my notes, synopsis. Do I? I spent the whole month off writing this. Ha, I kid, but hopefully it sounds like that. And gentle listeners, we are taking you back to a simpler yet more complicated time. Come with us to 1980. Ronald Reagan was elected president. Sandra Day O'Connor became the first female U.S. Supreme Court justice. A little channel called MTV was birthed into the world. And women were entering the workforce in record numbers. This is where we meet the ladies, nay, the icons that yes. star in 9 to 5. We have Violet, played by Lily Tomlin, who is a hard-working widow and a pillar at her company. She's also overlooked and constantly trains people who get frequently promoted over her. Mm. Mostly men. What am I saying? Pretty much the men she trains become her superiors. Mm-hmm. But she doesn't have to worry about that because her most recent trainee is Judy, played by Jane Fonda. Judy's in the midst of a divorce and just entering the work world. And poor innocent Judy has been used and abused by men. And unfortunately, working this job will be no different. But nobody has it worse than Dora Lee, played by the legend Dolly Parton.
Yes.
Dora Lee is a secretary for Mr. Hart, played by Dabney Coleman, who incidentally is also Violet's boss. Mr. Hart uses every opportunity he can to grope and harass and hound Dora Lee like the dog that he is, while simultaneously exploiting Violet. Mm. Not in a sexual way, but still, hurts just as bad. Until one fateful day, the women unite and compare notes on the villainous Mr. Hart, and then through a series of unfortunate or fortunate events, they are forced to kidnap his diabolical boss ass, hold him captive while they take over the company and change the face of their work world. Will Violet, Judy, and Dorley get caught up for their felonious activities, or will they shatter that glass ceiling and make the company equal for men and women alike? Find out with us as we punch our time cards for 9 to 5.
Yay! That was amazing.
Mm-hmm. Took me a whole month to write it.
Well, congratulations. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And I was so busy during the month of June that it took me a whole month to write this script. So there you go. Yeah.
You know, that synopsis when I started was 10 pages long. You're lucky. It would have been the Tam show. I would have just like gone on a whole monologue and accidentally did the movie myself.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Mm. I like it. I'll just be your cheerleader. Go, Tamara. Go. Go, Tamara. Go.
No. I don't want you to do that. Why don't you get us started, Corinne, just to make sure that I don't hog the spotlight or the microphone. Can you actually hog the spotlight in a podcast? I'm not sure.
I don't know, but I will grab your microphone. I'm putting you on mute. No.
God. Cancel culture in our podcast. Jesus.
I am ready to start, though. Ding, 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 stumble out of bed and tumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition. It's 1980, and women are entering the workforce more than ever. Dolly Parton's 9 to 5 plays while a montage of women dressed in their skirt suits with big floppy bows for ties run around in heels to get to work. They have obviously poured themselves a cup of ambition. Yeah.
I could not believe it, because in the opening scene of this, there's just a bunch of little feet running back and forth on a New York sidewalk, and every single woman is wearing heels. They have not learned it, the trick of wearing your sneakers into the office and then putting your heels on once you actually get there. It's uncanny. I wonder when that came about.
Well, no, because they're supposed to be wearing heels all the time because they're women, you see.
Oh, fuck that. Fuck right off with all that.
And I do want to also add, I too thought it was a New York sidewalk. And then I looked it up.
Oh, that's right. It's not. It's Chicago.
No.
No?
It's supposed to be Los Angeles. And I know. Wait, it gets better. The B-roll where the people are running around in the city. San Francisco.
I can't even imagine working in San Francisco wearing those fucking heels. If I could get away with it, I would walk to work without a bra on. But, you know, I would probably hurt myself and other people.
But, you know, you'd be amazing looking while you were doing it.
Couldn't walk too fast. I'd pull something. Anyways.
In one of those big, glassy Los Angeles office buildings, Violet, played by Lily Tomlin, is pissed at Norman from HR. He's hired a woman for the office, but this woman has never had a job. And Violet, one, doesn't think she should have been hired, and two, doesn't want to be stuck with training her. And for some perspective, Violet is not the manager of one area. She's the manager of four different areas. So really, who should be training her is somebody underneath her.
That is Violet's cross to bear.
Yes.
She gets all the dumb, stupid tasks that should not be on her plate.
She's just too good. Norman says, well, I thought you'd be sympathetic. She's recently divorced. And even though Violet is a widow who was in a similar position to this woman many years ago, she's still nonplussed. Just then, a woman walks into view outside the big plate glass walls of Norman's office. She's got her blue floral suit on with big floppy bow. And to top off her look, she's wearing her best hat. Tamara, what do you think about this hat?
Did you say her best hat, or did they say her best hat in the movie? Because I don't recall them saying it's her best hat.
I said her best hat.
Oh, dear God. That hat does not belong in the workplace or church or outside. I don't know where it belongs, but I can't even. What does that hat look like? It looks like the inside of a pill. You know, like when you get the blister packets of pills and then you push it? It looks like the underside of a blister pushed pill pack.
With a brim and some
flowers or whatever the fuck she has on them.
Yeah. It's special, that hat. And Violet raises an eyebrow, commenting, we're going to need a special locker for that hat.
It's called the trash. Yeah.
The circular file.
Yes, 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 yes.
As Violet shows Judy, played by Jane Fonda, around the office, Judy nervously rambles about parking her car until they stop at a bank of elevators. Eddie, the African-American inner office male guy, approaches Violet asking if she got her promotion, but she hasn't heard anything yet. Violet introduces Eddie to the company's newest employee, Judy. I put down Violet. Judy.
I did that a couple of times, too. I did it in the synopsis. I was like, and then Violet had to train Violet. I'm like, yes. What the fuck? Apparently, Judy looks a lot like a Violet. A shrinking Violet.
Yeah. Other than the fact that she's feisty like the cat that I used to take care of named Violet, there's no real Violet vibe to her, I would say. But Eddie doesn't acknowledge Judy, instead exclaming to Violet, how in the hell am I supposed to get out of the mailroom if they keep on hiring people from outside the company? He pushes his cart past Judy, saying to her, lady, you're going to hate it here.
Oh, Lord. It was the 1980s. I didn't have the heart to tell Eddie, honey, you're probably the wrong color to get up past the third floor. I am so sorry.
Yup. And that is the point that they were making. And I got to say that, look, none of the leads in this movie are anything but white. But for the 1980s, this movie actually has some diversity in it. And there are different, very small, yes, tertiary characters that have a few lines
right.
at multiple different places that are of different ethnicities,
yes.
which is more than you would get in most 1980s movies.
Exactly.
Oh,
appreciate that. Appreciate that.
The guy who mm-hmm. plays Eddie, I did this like whole like little, I don't know, deep dive on IMDb. And of course, he died like a year or two after this movie was made.
How?
So he died from the police.
Oh.
He had some kind of a mental break, I'm guessing. And he had been shouting for hours continuously in his apartment. The police were called. They came to get him. There was struggle. And they put him in the back of the police car. They were going to take him to the hospital, I think. But on the way there, he ended up dying.
Right. Because people frequently die in the back of police cars for no reason.
Like I said, there was a struggle. So, and he had been previously been running for several days, been running a temperature of like 105 or something like that. And they couldn't figure out what was going on with him, why he had that temperature. So there was something wrong going on with him physically. And then there was the whole mental thing. And then there was the whole police thing. And it was bad. So, yeah, he died.
Oh, I wonder if it was like that gal that you gave me that book about who saw the clock in like the half.
Oh, you know.
Yeah, what was that condition she had?
You may be right about that. Yeah, I can't even remember what that stinking book is called.
Yes, I know. Oh, my gosh. Brain on Fire.
Oh, yeah.
He might have had that brain on fire syndrome, because it kind of sounds like it makes you crazy for no reason. And I believe you have a fever at the same time.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. That's tragic.
Yeah.
Ugh.
But he was actually an up and coming actor, and he had had some nice little chunkies roles, like in I think he had bigger roles than what he had in 9 to 5. But in 9 to 5, he still, like, his presence was very, like, it was a good little role that he had, you know?
Mm-hmm. I know, when I was doing my little deep dive into 9 to 5, like, 9 to 5 was the biggest grossing movie of 1980 after Return of the Jedi, I think.
Okay. I can understand why.
Yeah.
I did not see 9 to 5 in the theaters, though, but I did see Return of the Jedi in the theaters.
I think I did, too.
I think 9 to 5 would have been way over my head.
I don't think my dad would have ever deemed to go see 9 to 5. He'd be like, space movies with robots or women in the workplace? This is hard. Let me think about it for a second. Anywho, back to the show. When Violet and Judy enter the elevator, Judy asks Violet about pay, but Violet explains that they're not allowed to discuss salary with each other. If she has any questions, she needs to ask Mr. Hart, their boss. My, how the times have changed. They get off the elevator on the 12th floor and walk into a room filled with lines of desks with people typing away at them. What do they do? Well, we'll never find out, but that's not important. This is the work world. No extraneous details needed. I was trying to figure out what the hell their company was and what it did. And
Consolidated.
It's called Consolidate. Consolidate what? We don't know. Consolidate who? I have no idea.
They consolidate things and then they move them from point A to point B. Uh-huh.
And that's all you need to know.
That's all you need to know. Things and stuff. And they do things and stuff.
Yes. Mostly with typewriters and copy machines. Violet sweeps her hand, pointing across the room. Welcome to purgatory. Just then a woman with a very coiffed bob with a wide bang approaches, and Violet whispers to Judy, uh-oh, here comes General Patton, Mr. Hart's administrative assistant. Violet tries swiftly walking away, but this woman is determined. Violet! Violet! She calls shrilly. Violet stops and turns. Oh, yes, Ross, sorry, I didn't see you there. Ross tersely states, Mr. Hart's rules about office decor seems to be getting a bit lax in your section. I have it all typed up. No coffee cups on the desk, no personal items left in view, no plants, etc. The office that looks efficient is efficient, as Mr. Hart says. The last part, Roz and Violet say in unison, because apparently Violet has heard this spiel before. Here, Roz says, handing Violet a list of standards. You can put this up in the bulletin board. She grimaces a smile. Thanks, Roz. I know right where to stick it. She briskly leaves, and Violet fills in Judy. The one thing you need to know about Roz is that she's the eyes and ears of Mr. Hart. Anything she hears, he hears. So if you want to gossip in the ladies' room, check for shoes under the stall doors first. She turns back to business and explains the office hierarchies. It turns out that Violet is the supervisor of all supervisors, and she reports directly to Mr. Hart. She points to his office. He was just made vice president, and I have never seen anyone leapfrog so fast to the top, and I have the bad back to prove it. I even trained Mr. Hart as management trainee. Judy asks Violet with wide eyes, what's he like? Violet takes a breath and then shakes her head wearily while she exhales. But fear not, gentle listeners, we're about to find out.
Oh, it's time to meet Mr. Hart, played by Dabney Coleman. He's pitch perfect. And we have the privilege of hearing him artfully muse to Judy and Violet about teamwork. He says to them as he wanders importantly around his office, you girls never had the opportunity to play football or baseball, which is too bad because that means you didn't get to experience what teamwork is like. Having a coach that leads you with a firm but inspirational hand. Think of me as your coach. Tamara's giving me the eyes.
Because women can't possibly play sports, right? Pesky menstruation that keeps them from kicking a ball around.
Well, there's that, and also they wouldn't possibly know what teamwork is, like working together at all. No.
You want me to what? You want me to put this ball in that basket? Whatever for? I don't see the point of it. You want me to kick this all across the grass? That sounds tedious. I don't think I want to do that.
I'm so glad that you understand women, Tamara. Okay.
Oh my God, the 80s. That's all I can say is the 80s.
Think of me as your coach. And remember, a chain is only as strong as its weakest link. He sits in his chair to punctuate this, only to have his chair, boing, launch backward. He briefly loses his composure, adjusts his chair, and then stands as he says, welcome to the team.
I was so bummed. So I'm like, oh, they're going to eject him. That's great.
Yeah.
Like literally, because it looked like he was going to fly out the 13th story window. And I was like, yeah. Oh, it's just a bum chair. Shit.
Sorry, Tamara. You have to wait a while to get that kind of satisfaction in this movie.
Okay.
I know.
All right, well, better deliver. That's all I got to say. Better deliver.
I'm getting it together. He thrusts his hand towards Judy. She responds politely, thank you, sir. It's wonderful to be here. They shake hands and he makes eye contact with her. Well, you seem like a good addition to our team and a mighty pretty one as well. Judy says stiffly, thank you, sir. As Violet gives him fuck you eyes while he's not looking at her. Mr. Hart continues, you should see some of the crones that have been coming through here lately. Real dogs. Am I right, Violet? Violet remains silent, but looks like she just sucked on a lemon. Mr. Hart continues oblivious. Oh, Violet, would you get my wife a present for me? A nice scarf or something? Violet tries to push back. We've discussed this. Shopping for you isn't under my job duties. Mr. Hart scoffs. Violet, I've been talking for 5 minutes, inspirationally, I might add, about teamwork, and you're not even here for the handoff. I want employees who are flexible and know how to get along, so when I ask an employee, especially one who wants to be promoted to management, I expect a little cooperation. This doesn't ring true for anyone.
Oh, my God. That's why my butt cheeks were clenched so hard. So very hard. So I was telling Corinne before we started this podcast that I had a similar situation just this afternoon, as a matter of fact, where I did not answer the phone properly and say the stupid little jingle for the center that I work at. And it happened to be my boss who said, Tamara, that's not what we say on the phone. And I said, that is what I say on the phone because I am not supposed to answer phones. I am a graphic designer, not a receptionist. And he said, well, yes, it is your job. Even though we had a thorough discussion about how I'm just quote unquote helping out because nobody else is in the building. And when I pushed back, he said, well, that's fine. We will just change your hours to when the center's hours are, which would be 4 p.m. to 12 a.m. And I was like, how can I help you, sir?
Sucking on the lemon. Fuck you very much.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, just FYI, still haven't found another job. So, yeah.
I'm just thinking about the hierarchy here. Like, Violet is, I would say, the top person before, well, I guess that there's, like, some people in between, but, like, almost the top person before Mr. Hart.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Hart has an administrative assistant, and he has a secretary.
Right.
Does he ask his administrative assistant to get coffee to run errands for him? No.
No, Ross is too busy spying.
Yes, she's too busy hanging out in the bathroom writing on toilet paper about people talking about mm-hmm. wages and shit.
Mm-hmm.
Oof. Mm-hmm. Oh, Ross. Must be good to be you. Not at all. How do you live with yourself? Anyways, I'm part of the team. You're part of the team. And it's so funny because the first administrative assistant job that I had, the person who I got the job through said to me, and we don't make coffee for people. She's like, we don't run personal errands for people. We do not get coffee for people.
Uh-huh.
And she made that very clear to me from the get-go. And
you know, the sad thing was after my heart sank when my lovely boss said that, mm-hmm. I was like, fuck that. He can't do that. And then I looked at the California laws and they can. I didn't see anything that said to the contrary that they can't change your hours without notice.
Oh, really? Oh, interesting. What the fuck?
Yeah, but it kept like referring to like retail and then part-time. So I was like, okay, full-time. But then I'm like, I couldn't find anything like definitive. And then I was just kind of like, oh God, well, good thing I didn't say anything worse and put my foot in my mouth because that would truly suck to work 4 p.m. to midnight, honestly.
Yeah. Usually like that kind of stuff is laid out in like the job contract that you have, which tells
you. No, I didn't sign a contract when I started.
Duties and stuff like that.
No.
Yeah. Good times. Good times.
mm-hmm. Great. Having a great time over here.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Peachy.
Now, minus the sexual harassment, it's not fair that Tamara works for Mr. Hart. It's... Violet responds, much like Tamara, got it. I will take care of it. Love a good threat from your boss man. Mr. Hart, having exerted his power, is feeling better and says to Judy, Violet here is a real keeper, knows more about the company than anyone. She's the first person I met when I got here, and she really showed me the ropes. Now, if you have any problems, Judy, don't hesitate to come to me to talk about it. That's why I have my office on this floor, to be close to my girls.
Ew.
Yes. Judy thanks him. And Mr. Hart opens his office door, ushering Violet and Judy back into the bustling main office floor. But before he closes the door, he gets one more ask in. Hey, Violet, is Dora Lee back? Violet glances across the way and says, nope. Mr. Hart says, okay, well then, can you get me some coffee, hon? No sugar, just some skinny and sweet. Violet smiles bitterly. Of course, Mr. Hart. Fuck you very much. Fuck you very much. Fuck you very much. She says under her breath. It's not audible in the movie, but I could tell. Mr. Hart closes the door, and as they're about to leave, Dora Lee approaches. She's dressed differently than the other women, wearing a cute vintage 1950s style dress with a sparkly green sweater over the top. I'm like, she's dressed like I dress for work, minus the sparkly green sweater. I do wear sweaters, but they aren't sparkly. She warmly approaches the two women. Hi, y'all. How's everyone doing? Violet responds politely. Great. The boss wants some coffee. Dora Lee responds jovially. I just got back from gassing up the car. It seems if I'm not filling up one tank, I'm filling up another. Violet responds by introducing Judy, and Dora Lee warmly effuses to her. Well, it's so nice to meet you. I know what it's like to be the new girl, so if you need anything, you just let me know. Judy nods timidly, and Violet whisks Judy away, showing her to her desk.
It must be mentioned that Dora Lee is played by Dolly Parton, and Dolly has some pretty remarkable tatas. Judy can't seem to look away from them in this scene. And then when she looks at her, and then she looks down at her chest, and then she looks at Dora Lee, and then she looks down at hers.
Oh, like, my gosh, I missed that. That's amazing.
Yes. It's like when we were in the tata line before we got back down to this earth, she must have been on the heavy side of the giving tata tree. Judy struggles getting used to her new job, but fortunately lunch comes, and before she's fed to the sharks of her fellow gossiping employees in the cafeteria, Violet whisks her away to his shopping trip to get that scarf for Mr. Hart's wife. As they leave, three other women at the lunch table imply pretty heavily that Dora Lee is sleeping with Mr. Hart, but Violet doesn't indulge in the gossip. She doesn't have time for it. When they get to the department store, Judy asks Violet about the rumors, and Violet clarifies, oh, they think Dora Lee is sleeping with Mr. Hart, but I credit her having more smarts and taste than that. Violet selects a red, white, and blue scarf to buy, while Judy confesses that her husband left her because he was having an affair. Violet says, well, I don't think that Mr. Hart is going to be getting rid of Mrs. Hart anytime soon. She's too good of a meal ticket for him. And so fitting that they get a red, white, and blue scarf for our Freedom Month here at ODK. Thank you, Violet. Thank you. And now we get to see what a fucking gross creeper Mr. Hart is. Oof. He sets up things on his desk so that he can subtly knock over his container of pencils while Dora Lee is taking dictation, giving him the opportunity to look down her top. He also asks Dora Lee to turn for him when she comes in so he can check her out, and apologizes for the mistake he made when he had Dora Lee accompany him on a work visit for a convention in San Francisco, but there was no convention.
Ew.
Mm-mm-mm.
And as she says,
Dora Lee,
Mr. Hart, that's my fault for not checking if there was actually a convention on that weekend. And I was like, yeah, because you know she's got to be like on top of her shit, making sure that she doesn't get sexually harassed, because it's her responsibility to avoid the whole thing.
Right. Yes. If a woman gets sexually harassed, it's her fault, sadly. But Dora Lee can smell what Mr. Hart is cooking and artfully bobs and weaves, avoiding his advances while maintaining her southern politeness. She tells him faster men than him have chased her, but she hasn't been caught yet. I'll try a southern accent. Faster men have chased her, but she hasn't been caught yet. He continues to press on, gifting her with the scarf that Violet bought, air quotes, for the wife, earlier that day. And after grabbing her hand and pleading and saying how crazy he is about Dora Lee, he resorts to money, telling her, I love you. I got a blank check and you can make it out for however much you want. We're perfect for each other. And the fact that we're both married makes things even better.
Ugh.
Dora Lee is not tempted and seems fed up with all his perviness. As he tries to pot her, she struggles away from him and they end up falling on the floor. Dora Lee quickly gets up just as the office door swings open. And who's coming through the door without knocking? Why, it's Mrs. Hart.
Woo-hoo.
She glides in wearing a full-length fur jacket, carrying a Louis Vuitton purse, and explains that she came by unannounced because she was so excited about the cruise she booked for them. Mr. Hart is not happy to see her, but I bet Dora Lee was relieved as fuck.
Uh-huh.
The wife notices the lovely scarf that the secretary has, and Dora Lee lets her know that Mr. Hart gave it to me. Mrs. Hart gushes, oh, isn't that sweet of you, Frank, and tells Dora Lee to put it on. Corinne writes, it doesn't go with her dress, but Dora Lee hastily drapes it across her neck so that Mrs. Hart can rhapsodize over how good it looks on her, even though it doesn't match at all.
It totally doesn't match at all. Her dress is super cute and it has all these like little green tones on it, and then red, white, and blue scarf.
The red, white, and blue scarf, yeah. When Mrs. Hart returns her attention to Frank, her husband, and begins doting on him, we see how completely oblivious she is to the debauchery he was attempting. Dora Lee hustles off out of the office, and once the door is closed, she whips off the scarf, putting it back in its box in a huff.
In a hot...
Violet glances up from Judy, who she's helping at her desk, and they both see Dora Lee with the incriminating scarf. Judy is shocked, while Violet is simultaneously surprised and beleaguered. Ah, who cares? I suppose she deserves it, dealing with that prick.
Yep. Oof. You know that fucking Dora Lee doesn't want that, as she said to Mr. Hart. Oh, Mr. Hart, I don't need you to write me checks. I know your signature better than you do. Oof. Motherfucker, that asshole. The next day at work, Dora Lee runs into Judy while she's waiting at the elevators. Dora Lee tries inviting her out to lunch, but Judy is giving her the cold shoulder. Hard. Judy's husband served her with divorce papers the night before while his mistress waited out in the car, and she cannot abide with the infidelity of it all. That evening, when Dora Lee is at home, she expresses her frustration to her husband over everyone giving her the cold shoulder at work. His solution? To tell her to smile. Just smile. And then have sex with her. Solves everything. Why even bother going to the doctor when you have that as a solution? Smile, baby, smile.
That made me cringe even more than as much as the Mr. Hart groping scene, because I have literally had guys tell me multiple times, like, why don't you just smile? And I'm like, why don't you just fuck off? I haven't been groped in an office behind closed doors, but I have been told to smile many, many times, and it just makes my skin crawl.
I've been told to smile not as often as you have, but like by randos, like on the street or whatever. But like when I'm at my job and stuff like that, I'm like smiling up a fucking glore. So it's.
Well, honey, you don't have as much of a magnificent bitch, resting bitch face as I do. That's what it is. My resting bitch face is on point. So
your resting bitch face is glorious. I love it. I do not think of it as a resting bitch face. I just think of it as perfection. It's so good.
And nobody can deny how I'm feeling by the expressions. I do not have a poker face. So if I'm annoyed at you, like, I'm just like, really? So I think that might be like why guys are like, why don't you smile more? Because you're scaring me.
Yeah, I'm very much Violet on that scale, like where... She looks like she's sucking on a lemon, and she looks like she could kill people with the daggers in her eyes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Same.
Yeah. Bad, bad. Some time has passed, and Judy is getting the hang of her job. She has conquered the copy machine that on her first day had spit papers everywhere and had Mr. Hart calling her an idiot and threatening to fire her. Dora Lee is still being shunned, and Violet, she's still being dismissed by Mr. Hart. Violet goes into his office, asking him if he looked at the report she gave him last month about color coding the accounts and how it could improve efficiency by up to 20%. He's dismissive. It's going to need some work. I'll get back to you later. And by later, he means his boss man, Mr. Hinkle, will be getting back to her when, much to her surprise, after she is approached by Roz about the latest memo about unionization and the terrors of it, that Violet said... I tore right on through that. Tore being the operative word. She and Roz get the treat of being greeted by Mr. Hinkle, who is walking with Mr. Hart. Hello, girls. He says to these, I don't know, 40-something-year-old women. Frank came up with the best idea, implementing color coding of our accounts. It should make us more efficient, and it's just brilliant. Frank, you have such great ideas. This is your floor. You can do whatever you want with it. Roz looks on proudly, while Violet looks like she wants to spit motherfucking nails.
Because that was her idea, fucker.
For real. And if she had Tamara's resting bitch face, they would have been turned to stone. God damn it.
There was one great part, though, where Mr. Hinkle and Mr. Hart were in the elevator, and Violet and Judy were, like, standing on the outside, and Mr. Hinkle's like, are you ladies going up? And Violet looks at Mr. Hart pointedly and says, no, we're going down. Like, it's going down, motherfucker. Yeah, you hear me? I can't tell you that directly, but you're going down.
Violet is the queen of double entendre, and not in a sexy way, but just in a, like, literal way.
I know. I was like, is that foreshadowing, Violet? Yeah, foreshadowing you're doing right there.
We love you, Violet. We're fans.
The one thing I couldn't understand, and I even researched it, is in many parts of this movie, she's got kind of like a silk, like kimono style top on.
Yeah.
And then she takes it off and on at various points.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, so is it business time? Like when she goes into Mr. Hart, she'll take it off and put like on more businessy attire. But then at some other points, like she keeps it on. And I was like, I want to know what that kimono top signifies. Like if it's down to business or if it's like, this is my true personality. And when I'm showing my true self and being my true, being true to myself, then it's on. But I couldn't find anything about it except for a couple of Reddit threads where people were like just pondering to themselves about the significance of her kimono top.
Oh, I thought it was her casual look, not her business look. And the thing about it is that when you see her wearing it, so like initially she gets into the office, she shows Judy around, she's wearing it because she hasn't really gotten started with her day yet. But then she goes and puts it in her locker and she changes into her stinking suit jacket.
Mm-hmm.
Where you see it come out more is post Mr. Hart not being in the office when they start making changes. And so then she's wearing the kimono top and people are starting to dress more casually throughout the office. And so there's a general look in clothing that changes as that happens.
Yeah, but it's not really specific enough to, because I'm like, she's wearing her kimono top in some of the interactions she has with Hart. So it's not like she pointedly takes it off when she sees him. It's just, it was kind of muddled in the translation. Yeah. So I was like hoping that I could find some like little thread online that like gives me the significance, and I didn't find it. And it still wasn't like, she's wearing it. No, she's not wearing it. She's wearing it. She is wearing it. She's not wearing it. I could probably go back and watch the movie again.
She should just be wearing her kimono top watch. Yeah, she should be wearing her suit jacket. And when she's not wearing her suit jacket, she should be wearing her suit jacket.
And there's a reason why I bring this up, and I'll get to it later in the show, because when I saw this secondary little like distinguishing wardrobe cue, I was like, oh, wait, now what about that kimono top? But I didn't have time to go watch the whole movie all through again. Anyways, when Violet isn't home, she's installing a garage door opener while her teenage son hands her some tools. She expresses her frustration about Mr. Hart stealing her idea and being called his girl by the president of the company.
Blech.
Her son asks, why didn't you say anything? Violet responds that she's trying to play the game because she's up for a promotion in 6 weeks and doesn't want to ruffle any feathers. Her son advises her to relax and tells her he's going to roll her a joint. The men in this film are so helpful, but we'll give him a bit of a break as he's a teenager. Thanks, son.
Hey,
the grudge.
I would say that's the most useful a man, besides the male guy, a man is in this movie.
I was so surprised that she wasn't like jumping down his throat being like, a joint? What are you doing smoking the devil's lettuce?
Well, she kind of was. She's like, you know, I don't approve of that. Blah, 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 blah. I just didn't get with
it. Yeah. That's not the 80s parent that I'm familiar with. Like, it was just in the era of don't do drugs, like, and marijuana's the gateway drug where you're going to smoke a joint and then in 2 weeks you're going to be addicted to crack. I don't believe that, but that was what all the drug commercials told us back when we were kids. And then, what do you mean that was the most helpful advice? Because that other guy said, smile, why don't you smile more? Like, I thought that was just a helpful heap of advice right there.
You're right.
Or explaining teams to us, Corinne.
I know.
If we knew what it was like to be in a group environment, having a man lead us, then we would be better people. See, you forgot those. You already forgot those points.
My boss man, love my boss man. But there are times when he explains things to me and I just want to be like, and it's just because he's excited and he wants to show me. But I'm like, motherfucker, you don't think I can figure this out?
Oh, God. Lord have mercy.
See, Tamara, when you use a pencil, what you want to do is you want to grip it in your hand with the little like pointy side down.
Oh, my God, no. No, I get that enough at work. Please stop. Violet and her son step out of the garage, and when she clicks the garage door remote, the door closes. Yay! She jumps up and down, feeling triumphant at least one thing for this moment in time. 6 weeks later, Violet meets Mr. Hart about promotion, and he tells her... What does he tell her? We'll find out after the break.
We're so excited.
Because we're going to clock out for lunch. We'll get back here in about a half an hour and let you know what's going on. Ha ha, I'm joking. And we're back. When we left off, Violet was eagerly waiting to hear from Mr. Hart whether or not she got the promotion. And guess what? He gave the promotion to another guy she trained. What?
Hey.
Bob Enright. Regardless of the fact that she has 5-year seniority on him, Violet demands to know why. And it comes down to 3 very solid reasons.
Ooh.
Want to guess what they are? No, you really don't. But I'll tell you anyways. They are...
Wait. My guess is... She is so valuable in the position that she's in that they simply cannot lose her to a different role.
No, I'm sorry, Corinne. Oh. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200.
She bleeds monthly.
She bleeds monthly. She's too full of estrogen.
Yes.
The answers are, 1, he has a college degree. Fucking elitism. Am I right?
Uh-huh.
2, he has a family to feed. And need I remind you that Violet is a widower with, 2 to 3 kids?
Yeah.
So now she also has a family, but since she's not at the head of the household, I'm guessing it doesn't count?
But she is the head of the household because she is the only person in the household, so fuck you off very much.
And then some sort of bizarre 1980s math. Apparently it is more important for a man to support his wife and kids than Violet to support her kids without a husband. Or something.
Obviously. I mean, hello.
At first I was like, okay, well, they're probably in a joint working household. So this Bob Enright doesn't need the money as much as Violet because there's probably 2 working parents. And I'm like, oh, wait, it was the 80s.
Yeah.
She's probably a stay-at-home wife.
Because
that was a thing once. Yeah. The economy was so good, even though it was bad. It was good enough that you could have a single working household, people. If you can believe that, one person could be working in the household while one person stayed at home, mostly the woman, taking care of the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And, last but not least, 3, the reason that Bob Enright got the promotion is he's a man. And people feel more comfortable working with men. Fuck you very much.
He literally says because he's a man.
Yeah, no, we're not making that up. That was verbatim what Mr. Hart says.
Mm-hmm.
He's a man. We needed a man for this position.
Asshole.
Yeah. Okay, anyways. I was trying to think of something nasty to say, but I couldn't. My brain is so fried with anger. Okay. Shockingly, Violet's not okay with any of this and argues against each of his excuses. I mean, points. Mr. Hart is pissed. Spare me the women's lib crap. I'm your boss, so what I say goes. Mm. He emphatically sits in his chair and it springs back. Is he going to get ejected? Is he? No.
No.
His feet just fly into the air as he bellows, Dora Lee, get in here. I thought I told you to fix this chair 6 weeks ago. Violet is pissed and declares, okay, I'll leave, but before I go, don't you ever refer to me as your girl again. Dorley enters and Violet continues undeterred, I'm no girl. I'm a woman. I'm not your wife or your mother or even, she glances over at Dorley, your mistress. Dorley is shocked, What? But Violet bulldozes on, punctuating her words by raising her fist emphatically towards the ceiling. Nuh-uh. I'm your employee, and as such, I expect to be treated equally with a little dignity and a little respect. Dora Lee, however, is stuck on the mistress bit. What do you mean, mistress? And Mr. Hart says, don't worry about it, Dora Lee, while Violet confronts her. Just come off it already. The entire company knows you two are having an affair. And Dora Lee is outraged. Who's been saying that we've been having an affair? Violet walks to the door, swinging it open while Dora Lee relentlessly demands, Who? Who's been saying that? Violet points, Mr. Hart, he has, and exits, slamming the door behind her. She grabs her stuff from her desk and takes an early day to go to the local bar and get drunk.
Amen to that. And this afternoon,
oof,
I was like, Tamara, we should leave our jobs early and go to the local bar and get drunk with each other.
Too bad we're 6 hours away and my blood pressure is too high to drink and you don't drink at all.
Hey, I can still have a tiki drink. Gosh darn it.
That's true.
Meanwhile, in Mr. Hart's office, hell hath no fury like a Dora Lee scorned. She is done with his shit, calling him out on his dropping pencils trick and his other forms of sexual harassment. She corners him into his office chair, emphatically yelling at him, "Up until now, I've been forgiven and forgetting, but if I hear you've been saying anything about me, or if you act in any way inappropriately towards me, I've got a gun in my purse, and I'm going to get that gun of mine, and I'm going to change you from a rooster to a hen with one shot."
Yeehaw.
She walks towards the door, exclaiming, "Don't think I can't do it." And she slams the door, grabbing her stuff from her desk. Roz approaches her, asking, "Where are you going?" Dorley gives no fucks at this point, saying, "I need a drink, Roz. I'm taking the rest of the day off." And she gets the fuck out of there. Since Violet and Doralee are having fun, Roz engages in her favorite pastime, camping out in the bathroom, eavesdropping for Mr. Hart points, and overhears Maria Delgado telling another employee her salary and guessing what Roz's and Mr. Hart's salary was. When she reports back to Mr. Hart, he commands to Roz, "Get rid of her! Fire the bitch!"
For sharing wages.
Yep. But, you know, even in companies that I worked for in the early 2000s, they were like, we're not allowed to discuss salaries with each other.
I know. It just recently became legal that you cannot, like, you can't get reprimanded or punished for talking about wages, but they still frown very, very hard on it.
Yeah. Goodness knows we find out that there's not equity in salaries and get a little upset about that. Huh, go figure.
Especially for some people that are there half the time as you are and making more money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oof. Next, we see Maria being supervised by security as she packs up her stuff while Judy stands by her side exclaiming, "What? You got fired for that?" Maria has had enough. "That's okay. I wanted to spend more time with my kids anyways. It was hard for me to work full time." Judy is outraged. "Where's Violet? Does she know about this?" The office drunk Margaret, who cheered on both Violet and Dorley as they left to get drunk, lets Judy know, "No, she's down at Charlie's. But we're changing the name of Charlie's in a tribute to Tamara's dad. And a trip that we made back in the day all together to Vowels. The Howls."
The Howls.
A bar stuck in time. Stuck in the 70s, 80s. It's glorious. Your dad knew all the gems.
He did.
That's a good memory. Judy is pissed. "I'm going to tell Violet. This is a disgrace." She slams down her papers onto a desk and heads out for the house.
The house. The reason why we decided to rename Charlie's as the Hells is because Charlie's, a.k.a. the Hells, is the most early 80s looking bar. Naugahyde everywhere and wrought iron curled as partition decor. And the Hells was not much more than that. It was green Naugahyde and very, very retro, not on purpose, wallpaper.
Wallpaper,
green,
yeah.
And yeah, it had like some fucking floral as hell, busy as wallpaper. Some really crazy vintage pictures on the wall. And we went there and Corinne was just like, "This place is fabulous!" I was looking around going, "Oh, what in the 70s hell?" And she just like, just eased on into that bar chair and was like, "I'm staying here forever."
Oh, I was fully like, if I get married, I want it to be here. I want the reception to be here. This place is amazing.
The Hals is still there in Alviso, California, and it is so old school that they still have liver and onions on the menu. Yeah, good times. Good times. Anyways, so at the Hells, Dorley, Violet, and Judy sit next to each other at the bar with drinks, each with their respective outrages. Finally, Violet comes up with an idea. Is it a good one? I don't know, but it's an idea. She sees the marijuana cigarette that her son slipped into her purse and proposes they go smoke that joint together. To the restroom to spark this puppy up! Oh, wait, wait, wait a second. It's the 80s, and marijuana is still seen as a hard drug that can get you jail time. So Doralee invites them over to her place. Her husband is out late playing a gig, and they'll have the whole place to themselves. Cut to three giggling high-as-fuck women having a party. At Doralee's house. Through the laughter, Doralee shares with the other two about how she threatened Mr. Hart with the gun, and the trio dissolve into gleeful hysterics. Judy giddily shares how she had this vision. Doralee's apartment fades, and we get a cutaway shot to an apocalyptic version of their office, a.k.a. Judy's fantasy. All the disgruntled employees are hunting down the evil Hart with pitchforks and torches. A sweaty Hart fearfully hides behind a desk and then scurries to the office, closing his door safely behind him, only to find Judy turn around in his office chair. She is donning big game hunting gear and holding a rifle. She regards him coolly as he pleads, "You've got to help me. There's a mob out there, and I think they're going to kill me." Like that to I had no idea why they'd want to do a thing like that to innocent little old me. Judy widens her eyes innocently. "Oh, I don't know. You are, after all, a sexist, egotistical, lying, hypocritical bigot." Hart shrugs. "Okay, so I have a few flaws. That's not a reason to kill me." But Judy disagrees. "You're a wart on the nose of humanity, and I'm gonna blast it off. Goodbye, boss man. It's quitting time." He flees while Judy shoots at him. She misses, and he runs back and forth like a duck in a shooting gallery. He darts into the ladies' room and crouches on top of the toilet, but she hunts him down there, aims her gun, shoots him, and turns his head into a trophy, much like the stuffed deer head he has hanging on his office wall. We turn back to the trio, laughing and happily digging into some barbecue that Doralee's husband made the night before. It's munchies time. Oh, yeah. Weed makes all food taste better. Don't you agree, Corinne?
It doesn't work well with me.
Oh, God. Yeah. It does me. Everything's like you said, as they orgasm over the food, every little bit of food is an orgasm in your mouth, at least for me when I smoke a joint. Anywho. Violet asks Doralee what she'd like to do to Hart, and Doralee delightfully replies, "Well, I'd give him a taste of his own medicine." And we are whisked to a sunny desert vista where Doralee is dressed as a cowgirl, riding her horse from the corral into her office. She gets on the intercom on her desk and calls, "Hey, hot stuff, grab your pad and pencil and get your buns in here." A very demure version of Hart comes in prepared to work, but she asks him to stop.
Hammer time.
He innocently asks, "Oh, is everything okay?" Doralee slyly replies, "Oh, yeah, I just enjoy looking at you. But you could really do with getting your pants cut a little bit tighter in the crotch. You got a nice package. You might as well show it off." Mm-hmm. He scoffs embarrassed, but sits down to take her memo. And she starts dictating, then stops, sniffing the air. "Oh, that's some great cologne you're wearing there, Frank. What's it called?" He glances up from his pad, shyly stating, "Stud." She continues to harass him, the apex being when she puts a scarf around his neck, much like the one he gave her, before shoving his face between her bosoms and demanding a kiss. "Kiss me or get fired!" The chaste Hart has endured enough and timidly leaves the office, but Doralee isn't having it. She lassos him as he walks towards the elevator banks. A rodeo announcer commentates, "And he's down the chute. It's a big bull hitter from the high glass tower. How long will it take Doralee to tie this sexist, egotistical, lying, hypocritical bigot?" Doralee handily ties him up, and the announcer exclaims, "5 seconds, ladies and gentlemen, 5 seconds!" The next thing we know, he's on a spit over an open campfire, and we flash back to Doralee's. The ladies all laugh. They have since moved onto the porch. Judy asked in hushed tones, "Do you have a gun?" And Doralee says, "Yeah, I keep it in my purse. I only used it once when I was with my friend and some guys wouldn't leave us alone. I went to grab it and accidentally shot a hole through my purse. But the guys left us alone."
Ha ha! Good times. The women appreciate this. Then Doralee asks, "What about you, Violet? What would you do?" And Violet gets a dreamy look on her face. "Well, it'd be like a fairy tale. Something gory, but kind of cute. I was like, oh, Violet, woman after my own heart. And we travel into Violet's fantasy where she goes to work dressed like Snow White. When Mr. Hart demands some coffee, she cheerily replies, yes, sir. And her gang of animated friends join her on her way to the break room where she happily pours a cup of coffee, singing along with the birds. But instead of skinny and sweet, she pours some powdered poison from her ring. An animated bluebird helpfully brings over a spoon for her. And after she stirs the coffee, not much of the spoon is left, but the coffee is ready. She happily brings the coffee to Mr. Hart. The birds and other animals flock gathered happily to watch the sight. He drinks the coffee. Steam comes out of his ears. His head spins round and he states, I think there's something in the coffee. And I think you did it. But why? She smiles. Yes, I poisoned it. Why do you think? She spins his chair around to his open window. Maybe you should read this because you've been wanting this moment.
Oh, spins around to open window, levering up his chair. He responds, because I'm a sexist, egotistical, lying, hypocritical bigot. She happily responds, bingo, and catapults him out the window as a boing, spring sound plays. Oh, thank you, Corinne. That was like a itch I really needed to scratch.
I was like, you've been waiting for this moment since the beginning of the movie.
I was at least hoping when that chair, like a dunk dunked, yeah, when he sat on it, that he would at least hit the ground. But that never happened either.
Yeah.
Oh, so satisfying.
Yes. Violet turns into a princess along with Dora Lee and Judy. They toast and peace reigns in the kingdom. Everyone is freed from their drudge work and the kingdom cheers them on. The next day, the trio returns to work, having bonded. Dora Lee explains that Mr. Hart is super happy because his wife left on a 2-month trip to the South Seas. Judy excitedly suggests that they all should have lunch together, but Violet can't. She's got to go shopping during lunch. Her house is out of all the staples like cat food, skinny and sweet, and rat poison.
Mm-hmm, staples.
Dora Lee is out, too, because she's got to bring papers to Mr. Hart's lawyer's office. Violet is disappointed because that means she becomes his de facto Dora Lee. And sure enough, after lunch, Mr. Hart demands some coffee of Violet. She goes to the break room grumbling about Mr. Hart, pours the coffee, but shakes the container of skinny and squeet. Squeet? Skinny and squeet! It's empty! Oh, no! Fortunately, she picks some up during lunch, so she quickly grabs the container from her locker, opens the box, and spoons in the requisite amount. She leaves the break room with the coffee, saying, I'm calm. I'm perfectly calm. And the camera pans to the skinny and sweet on the counter, but it's not skinny and sweet. It's Riddle Rat. The package says, caution, keep out of reach of children, but it should say, and disgruntled employees.
All of those times in the 80s where you wonder why there's bubble wrap over everything and child safety tabs and caps that are hard as the bejeebus to open. It's because moments like this, oftentimes when you had your coffee sweetener that looked just like rat poison.
Don't you hate it when
same
that
size
happens?
Box, same color, yeah. Somebody had to have eaten something weird to have those do not eat this little tabs like everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's how the times have changed. Anywho, Violet drops a coffee off for Mr. Hart, who is talking loudly on the phone. He brings down the receiver, not to thank Violet, but to threaten her. I've already told Bob, Enright, and Francine, the next time you get anything at all from Ajax Warehouse, you bring it directly to me. You got that? Violet leaves the office just in time to commiserate in passing with Dora Lee, who's just returned from the lawyer. Back in his office, Mr. Hart slams down the phone and grabs his cup of coffee to take a nice swig, but alas, his chair swiftly reclines back, causing him to yell, Dora Lee! Before he falls to the ground, hitting his head on the floor and knocking him out cold.
Finally, what you've been wanting to have happen to him when he jerks back.
He got ejected and finally fell the fuck out of that chair. Let me just sit here with that for a second. Okay, I can continue. Doralee walks into his office, finds the unconscious Mr. Hart, and the next thing we know, she's riding in the front seat of the ambulance while a dead-to-the-world Mr. Hart rides in the back. I would honestly just put his ass on that ambulance and let him go. Let me know how he is when he gets there, okay? Thanks, bye. But Doralee is a different creature than us. At the end of the day, Violet returns to the main office and Judy excitedly informs her, Mr. Hart got whisked away in an ambulance. Something happened to him. Violet muses, yeah, I hope nothing too bad happened, but I wouldn't mind if it was something just awful enough to keep him out of the office for the next 20 years or so.
Sure.
Judy leaves to drop something off and Violet heads to the break room to grab her stuff, immediately seeing the rat poison on the counter and realizing the awful mistake she made. Shit, 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 shit. She runs to Mr. Hart's office, hoping to find a full cold cup of coffee on his desk, but instead sees Ross on her hands and knees cleaning up a spill from the floor next to his desk. Violet asks in a panic, what happened, Ross? Ross calmly replies, he fell and hit his head on the credenza. Violet is panic-stricken. What about the coffee? The coffee! Ross hands her an empty cup. It was by him on the floor. He must have been drinking it when he blacked out.
No!
Oh, shit, 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 shit. Violet throws down the cup and runs out of the room, meeting Judy in the elevators. Judy! Judy! We have to go! Something terrible has happened! They enter the elevator, the doors close, and when they open up again on the floor, they clock out, and Judy exclaims, oh no, Violet, how could you? Violet responds, we gotta go to the hospital, let them know so they can pump his stomach. And Violet and Judy run to Violet's car and with the swiftness make their way to the St. Andrew's Hospital.
And now to summarize the hospital scene. It's a long scene. Mr. Hart comes to and the doctor wants him to have x-rays, but Mr. Hart isn't gonna be upcharged with that nonsense.
Mm-mm.
He gets up and leaves. Meanwhile, a guy under witness protection is wheeled in next door to him and he's not gonna make it. The police stand outside the door waiting for the prognosis. Violet, Judy, and Doralee have reunited at the hospital. Violet has explained what she did and they look over to see the police officers waiting outside the area that Mr. Hart was whisked off to. Violet freaks the fuck out because obviously they're there for Mr. Hart. The doctor comes out and talks to the police, letting them know the guy's dead and he's pretty sure it was poison. Violet is done. She's got to protect herself for the sake of her kids. So if there's no body for them to do an autopsy on, she'll be in the clear, right? 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 Right?
Nope. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
Thank you. Thank you. Super genius idea. While Judy and Doralee go off to find a phone to call a lawyer, the body for the autopsy, which is covered in a sheet, is wheeled out and left alone for a moment. Violet seizes her opportunity, grabbing a doctor's coat from the laundry room and wheeling the body away. Doralee and Judy look out the window just in time to see Violet roll the body out to her car and stuff it in the trunk. But these three musketeers are all for one and one for all, because we're all for one and one for all. That's not quite the lyrics, but I do it anyways because I love it. So Doralee and Judy run outside, jumping into Violet's car. Violet drives like a madwoman, trying to get to the pier to dump the body. Unfortunately, her driving causes her to crash, getting the car stuck. When Doralee goes to the trunk to get a tire iron out to work as a lever, the covered body becomes uncovered. And she says, Violet, honey, would you come over here for a second? Violet comes back to the trunk and looks inside the trunk to find a dead guy who is not Mr. Hart in the trunk. Violet sighs. Well, I guess I made a mistake. Doralee is not having it. You steal the wrong body from the hospital and all you can say is I must have made a mistake. Violet is kind of relieved, though. Oh, no big deal. We'll just take it back. Doralee is pissed, though. Great. We're going to bring the body back and say, oh, I'm sorry. We stole the wrong body from the hospital. It was a mistake. Judy, ever the voice of reason, tells them both to shut up and they'll take it one step at a time. They get the car loose, but as they drive off, we see that there is a taillight out on the car. Ruh-roh.
Mm-hmm.
So it's no surprise when they get pulled over. But since they're white women, the cop is friendly and says he's happy to take a look at the taillight that isn't working. Maybe he can fix it. They just need to pop the trunk for him. Reminds me of the episode of Cops that I saw where the woman was like, oh, no, the wire's just loose. And she pops open her trunk. She fixes the wire. But when she does it, a vial of crack falls out of her pocket.
Oh, good times.
Same thing. So, you know, you go to fix the wires in a trunk and there's a dead body in there.
You know, dead body, crack. It's all the same, right?
Yeah.
Yep. But see, it's not the dead body that you killed, so it's all good. It's just a mistake. You just explained to the popo it's a mistake.
I remember my favorite episode of Cops was when they pulled over a guy and he gets out of the car and he's sitting there having a full-on conversation with the cop for like 10 minutes with the joint tucked behind his ear. And the cop's like, you been drinking or doing any drugs tonight? No, officer, I don't drink and I don't do drugs. Oh, no, never? You don't ever do anything? No marijuana or... Nope, don't touch the stuff. And he's got like a fucking joint bobbing right next to his head. It was like the cop like just totally dragged out that conversation for dramatic effect before he like reached up and plucked it out from behind his ear. And the guy's like, you got me.
That's like your dad.
Yeah.
Oh, well. There is a body in the trunk. Okay, you found out.
I tried. You're a good one. Yep, you.
Dorley, thinking on her feet, says, I'm sorry, officer. We don't have time. It's an emergency. Judy joins in. Yes, she's a doctor. Gesturing towards Violet, the officer says, you're a doctor? And Violet responds hostilely. What do you think I am, a beautician? Pointing to the name badge on the stolen doctor's coat she's wearing.
Of course she can't be a doctor. She's a woman. Yes, yep. I absolutely thought you were a beautician.
You were wearing a beautician's coat. No! No!
Oh, well, okay, I'm sorry. You don't always have to be a beautician if you wear the white coat. You can also work at See's Candy. My bad.
Oh, and then there's samples. What are the samples today, Tamara? The officer apologizes and asks what the emergency is. Violet responds, I'm taking this woman to the hospital and she's very sick. The officer asks, concerned, which one of you is sick? Doralee and Judy simultaneously say, I am.
She is.
And Violet says gravely, they both are. Judy tries subtly tucking the rat poison in the front of her jacket, but nothing gets past this guy. What's that you have there? He asks Judy. Judy looks up innocently, revealing the rat poison. Oh, this? It's rat poison. Violet hops on it. They ate it. And Doralee looks innocently at the officer. It looks just like skinny and sweet. Judy continues, except for the tiny skull and crossbones. And the giant rat that's on there, but shh, we're not going to talk about that.
I was about to say that. It could be mistaken for a cup of coffee, I guess. A rat-shaped cup of coffee.
Yeah. Oh, like that person from Netflix who does the cakes and stuff in like the little horror kind of ways that are like super cute too.
I haven't seen that.
Oh, she's this like awesome baker and she's like, and here's a cake with like cute little spiders on it and stuff like that.
Oh, cute little spiders. Nothing says celebrate like cute little spiders.
I know, right? On a cake. Yeah.
No, wrong.
Doralee begs, can we go now? I'm not feeling so well. The officer says, got it. Let me give you an escort. And Doralee has had enough. She says under her breath, oh, Lord. Violet says, forget it, bub. We can't wait. And she takes off, leaving the officer in the dust. They manage to return the body to the hospital, but aren't able to find out anything about what happened to Mr. Hart. They vow to return to work tomorrow, act like nothing happened, and see what happens.
The funny part about them returning it to the hospital is they put the body in a wheelchair and then wheel it into a bathroom and some like orderly walks in and she just looks at the body in the wheelchair and pops her head out of the bathroom door and says just like nonchalantly to her coworker, we got another dead one in the bathroom. Like it happens every other day.
If I had a dollar for every time there is a dead body in my bathroom, I mean, whew, I'd be flying this first class everywhere.
I found some strange things in my work bathroom, but never a dead body.
Good. We like to keep it that way.
Yes. I'm also very worried about you since you work in a chiropractor's office and you're talking about finding dead bodies in your bathroom.
I'm like in such bad taste because I'm always joking with people about us doing horrible things to them. And they'll come out of their appointment and I'll be like, welcome back. And I'm so glad he didn't conk you over the head and put you in the closet. Like,
and they don't laugh.
Sometimes they do. Sometimes they just stare at me, you know.
Okay. Yeah. I would probably do that too, just to entertain myself. Let's gauge this person or read the room, see if I can't make you laugh or look at me disgustedly and then have a little tally behind my desk about what do I think this person's going to do. Imagine the lady's surprise when Mr. Hart comes back into the office the next day looking fresh as a spring daisy. The three women convene in the bathroom to talk about the day before. They spill all the beans, but little do they know, fucking Roz has her feet tucked up in the stall and is taking notes on her little piece of toilet paper.
Ugh.
So, Roz, God love her, types up a transcript and gives her notes to Mr. Hart. Meanwhile, the girls think they're in the clear. It's the end of the day, and the trio is happily about to head out to Vahal's for drinks. And Dorley drops by Mr. Hart's office to check on him before she leaves. And he tries to blackmail her into sleeping with him.
Fuck
her. What a mensch. Mr. Hart knows all about their little scheme and the attempts to try to poison. Dorley tries dissuading him, telling him it was all a mistake, but he picks up the phone to call the police. Dorley swiftly unplugs the phone and Mr. Hart nonchalantly moves over to the seating area in his office. Don't worry, I got another phone over here. Dorley has had it. Mr. Hart, you are evil to the core and I've had enough of your bullshit. He chuckles. I love it when you're all fiery like that. She pushes him on the chair and quickly grabs a cord from the other phone, hog-tying him, much like in her fantasy, and shoving the scarf that he gave her into his mouth. Dorley goes out to the virtually empty office and asks, Judy, can you come over here for a moment? Dorley explains about Mr. Hart being an asshole and tells her to watch him. Lock the door and do not let anybody into this office while she goes and gets Violet. Once in Hart's office, Judy is much more of a softie than Dorley, taking the scarf out of his mouth and letting him talk her into loosening up the phone line that he has hogtied around his wrists and ankles because it hurts. As soon as she does, Mr. Hart gets up and goes straight to the phone to call the police again. Judy won't allow that to happen, though, and when she sees Dorley's purse next to her, she knows just what to do. She opens it up and pulls out Dorley's handgun. Don't move, she threatens. Mr. Hart turns around and sees her waving the gun around and chuckles. Oh, you're not going to do anything, and continues to leave the room. She, just like in her fantasy, shoots out the glass window next to his office door, causing Mr. Hart to freeze. Dorley and Violet walk in on all of this, and shit. Now they're really going to need to figure out what to do.
Cut to the threesome once again riding in a car together. Oh, and when they're in the car, because it's the 80s and you don't need to wear seat belts and whatnot, they're all three in the front seat together. It's very cute.
Yes. Yes, and the front seat is just a bench seat, so there's no center console to bang your delicate ta-ta or your
ta-tas.
What? Not your tatas. Your bottom tatas. Your vajayjay against. Bottom tata, a.k.a. vajayjay.
Yes.
Goodness. Boy, can I really paint a picture with words, can I?
Uh-huh. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. Bottom tatas it is. Mr. Mix-a-Lot says, I like big butts and I will not lie.
You other brothers can't deny. When a girl walks in with the itty-bitty waist and a round thing in your face, you get sprung.
The threesome pulls up to Mr. Hart's mansion, a large house far off the main road. It's private, real private. Perfect for those everyday moments when you kidnap your boss, stuff him in the trunk of your car, and hold him hostage at his palatial estate. You know, moments like that.
Like a regular old Thursday afternoon for us.
Uh-huh. Yeah. We've all had them. For some reason, though, when we next see Mr. Hart tied up in his bedroom, he doesn't really seem to appreciate the whole situation. He yells, kidnapping, attempted murder, roped, beaten, rat poison. I won't rest till you all get 20 years in prison. Well, the women who were hoping to reason with him quickly realize that isn't going to happen. So they convene privately in the living room, and Dorley lets them have it. She gestures to Violet. He's got you for poisoning, me for hog-tying him, and you, she gestures emphatically at Judy, for shooting at him like he's the first prize in a turkey shoot. Violet says, we've got to figure out a way of keeping him from talking. Doralee suggests getting some people to beat him up, but Judy comes up with a better, but not quite as satisfying idea. Blackmail. They go through his stuff looking for dirt, and the next morning, Violet finally finds something tucked away in his desk. An account book for Ajax Warehouse. Doralee and Violet head to Ajax Warehouse while Judy stays with Mr. Hart. And the warehouse is in the middle of nowhere and empty. Wow, 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 wow. A tumbleweed rolls through. The trio confronts Mr. Hart, letting him know they know about his empty warehouse. That's supposed to be filled with inventory from Consolidated. However, he must have sold the inventory and pocketed the money. Mr. Hart, who is tied to his bed, growls at them. You'll never be able to prove it. But Violet doesn't even flinch at his accusation. Don't you worry, Mr. Hart. I'm going to order the invoices from the head office on Monday. I think you'll see the light when they arrive. Mr. Hart threatens. You don't want to mess with me. You three dumb-witted broads aren't going to take me down. I'm going to get loose if it's the last thing I do. He seems to be really, like, trying to, you know, get onto their better side so that he can get let go.
Considering how much of a assholey lech he was in the earlier part of the movie, I would say so, yes. Mm-hmm. I wonder what was in that warehouse from Consolidated. What was the inventory that was supposed to be there? Things. Let's speculate wildly, shall we?
And stuff. Oh,
glow-in-the-dark dildos.
Yes. I was going to say giraffes and lions, but glow-in-the-dark dildos would work.
Glow-in-the-dark dildos shaped like giraffes and lions.
I like the direction mm-hmm. that this is going. Oh, no, that was just creepy. Corinne, we're just expunging that from our minds.
Now you have to say it. You can cut it, but you have to say it.
Shirley Temple's On the Good Ship Lollipop plays in the background.
Okay.
On the Good Ship Lollipop, it's great. Trip to the candy shop where bonbons play. Happy landing on the Peppermint Bay.
Of course.
Maybe it's Moby Dick. Lots of copies of Moby Dick.
Just Moby Dick.
Well, do you need anything else? I mean, that novel is very comprehensive, very big.
Right. A whole warehouse. Mounds of dicks.
Mounds of dicks
in the warehouse.
Because they can be created into a sculpture of a whale.
Oh, because that's what you need in a warehouse. Yes.
Yes, yes, yes.
Absolutely. With the Good Ship Lollipop hanging back. Because what else do you need with a whale but a good ship?
Exactly.
So, Judy, Doralee, and Violet hustle off to the sports supply store to find a better way to confine Mr. Hart. But fear not, gentle listeners. They want something that will limit his movements, but also wear well and be comfortable. They care about the form and function of their restraints. So, with some dog collars of varying sizes, a hang gliding harness, several lengths of hefty chain, link, and a garage door opener, they fashion quite the system to get a bit of mobility but keep him confined. He shakes his head, disgusted. You are ridiculous. You won't be able to keep me here for a week. I'm the boss. People will miss me at the office. And I have a little side note that says, one of these women must have an engineering degree for that hardware setup that they erect in Mr. Hart's bedroom because it is something.
Oh, it had to be Violet because she put the fucking garage door opener. She installed the garage door opener at home. And so she knew how that worked and she figured out how that could work with the skydiving harness.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right. Well, Violet can do everything after all.
Violet's amazing. Violet needs a raise and she needs a promotion, just like you.
Uh-huh. So, Mr. Hart proclaimed that people will miss him because he's the boss, but do they? Next, we see Doralee answering Hart's phone at work, savvily handling the situation, even going so far as to put off the very determined Roz by staging a lit cigar in Mr. Hart's office. When Roz comes out saying, he's not in there, Doralee feigns innocence. Oh, really? she says as she walks back into Mr. Hart's office with Ross. His jacket's right there, and oh, wouldn't you look, if I've told him once, I've told him 100 times. Leaving these lit is such a fire hazard. And she nonchalantly puts out Mr. Hart's, air quotes, lit cigar. Roz is not to be deterred. We'll tell him I need to see him by the end of the day. Dorley assures her, will do, Roz. But she knows that Roz is the one person in the office who could really fuck their shit up. And there is a scene in between this that Corinne didn't include, but I feel the need to include it because this is how my whole kimono debacle came into my mind. Because there's a scene that's unimportant between Violet and Dorley. They have an exchange in the break room as they're trying to read through some pertinent files and make sure that Mr. Hart's like itinerary is getting squared away. And I bring it up because throughout the movie, Miss Dorley has this gold script necklace that she wears around her neck with her name on it. So it's a gold script Dorley. Mm-hmm. And I only noticed it because she's so well endowed and that necklace hangs so low that I'm like, oh, Dorley, bad idea, bad idea. That is just like an arrow pointing to your tatas. And in the workplace that you're at, that is just a good excuse for men to come and be like, oh, can I see your necklace? And then grab it and like graze the tatas like accidentally. Uh-huh. But anyways, so in this scene, there is like Violet sitting in front of the coffee pot, and she also all of a sudden is wearing a similar gold necklace with gold script on it, but her gold script says equal. So in none of the other places in the movie was she wearing a necklace, but then when they got Mr. Hart and tied him up in his bedroom, the next day when she goes into work, she's wearing a gold necklace that says equal, much like Dorley's Dorley necklace.
Equal.
And I thought that was kind of interesting.
That's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Mm-hmm. That's when I was like, oh, it's a sign. Like, this is when things start being equal. Like, ding, ding, ding. And if you couldn't tell, it's written on her necklace. And so that's when I started being like, what other Easter eggs are in this movie that I missed earlier?
We obviously need to get Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin, and Dolly Parton on the podcast so that we can talk to them about 9 to 5.
Get them right away. Yep. Easy peasy.
No problem.
Meanwhile, Hart tears through his room in his bathroom, trying to figure out a way to break free. Finally, he breaks a TV tray and grabs a portion of the leg, planning to use it as a club/staking tool when Dorley returns to the house to bring him lunch. He plays innocent when she asks him where his TV tray is, and he lets her know it's in the corner. When she moves into the corner to grab it, he comes up behind her to club her on the head. However, she sees him in the mirror's reflection, and we fully get the genius behind this restraint system as she hits the garage door opener, and the garage door cable pulls him back and up to the ceiling. And while he's completely immobilized, he's swinging around, threatening her while hanging from the ceiling.
So good. I get such satisfaction out of seeing Mr. Hart, Dabney Coleman, swinging from the ceiling. It happens multiple times, and every time I'm like, yes, yes, more, more.
Just like me getting a thrill seeing him ejected from his seat.
Oh, so good. At the end of their first day of work, without Mr. Hart, the trio gathers at Hart's house to check in. It all went pretty well, minus Roz. However, Violet has some bad news. The records department is changing systems and won't be able to get them the data they need until 4 to 6 weeks.
The blackmailing data?
The blackmailing data! Oh no!
No!
Not the week that they were hoping for. Dorley is hopeful. I think we can do it. I never realized how unpopular he is. No one wants to meet with him. Judy adds, except Roz. We've got to figure out what to do with her. Maybe we can send her on vacation. Violet agrees. Yeah, that would be good, but it's only 2 weeks. We need her gone longer than that. Judy has an idea. What about the Aspen Language Center? It's one of those language immersion places. Maybe we can send her there. Violet agrees. Yeah, we can have Mr. Hart write her a letter saying it's top secret. Consolidated is opening offices overseas, and they need execs who can, I don't know, speak French? Cut to Roz, seated on a plane, pleased as punch, looking at a language book, saying, Bonjour, Bonjour, Bonjour. She's also wearing a beret, which is something that I was afraid that Tamara had accidentally gotten in in a gift that I sent her, and I was a little mortified, but fortunately that was not the case.
No, Corinne was lovely enough to get me Jonathan Van Ness hair products, and there was a free gift with purchase, but she didn't know what that free gift was. One of the free gifts was a set of barrettes, and I tried to tell Corinne in a text that I got a set of barrettes, but my damn spell check put berets, and she's like, oh my god, one of your free gifts was berets, and I was like, no, damn it, spell check, it was berets, and she goes, oh, thank god.
I sent her a gift with a guy who's wearing a beret and holding like some French bread or something like that.
Because you know what every woman needs when they get hair care products is a beret to cover it.
Oh, berets. If anybody loves berets, good for you. However, I personally just have associations of berets with my sister in like sixth and seventh grade, thinking that she was a trendsetter, being like, I got the beret on with on top of my super permed, very short hair. It was a look. Perhaps a little bit Marcel Marceau. It was a look. All she needed was some of this foundation that I have here, and she would have been good to go.
You mean the foundation that makes you look like a kabuki?
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a nice light tan color, but then I put it on and it's white. Very white. Yes.
It takes all of the color out of your face.
Yes.
You look corpse-like.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's really kind of unsettling. But perfect for when I want to play a dead person.
Yes.
Yeah. No. So the women know it's going to be a race between Mr. Hart figuring out how to get free and them getting their paperwork. Doralee muses to the women. Well, I think we're going to be able to pull this off. Maybe I should send Mrs. Hart a bouquet of flowers. And hey, while we're at it, I'll have Mr. Hart let people keep flowers on their desk. Some of his rules are so depressing. Next thing we know, Doralee is at work, wielding Mr. Hart's signature to let people have stuff on their desks, paint the office cheery colors, and turn the office no smoking. What? A non-smoking office? Violet and Judy have gathered around Doralee's desk, admiring the fresh look of their office, but Violet's brain hamster has been inspired by Doralee's brain hamster. It starts going squeaky, squeaky, on that wheel, and Violet says, well, if we're going to do this, let's make more substantial changes, ones that really count. Bam! Substantive changes! Ahoy! Woo! As Jillian says on True Crime Obsessed, let the women do the work. And while I kind of have a problem with that because women are always fucking doing the work, in this case, it's good work that's being done. They make changes that we still don't see in today's workplaces. Equal play, equal pay for equal job levels, a daycare center in their office, the ability to work their jobs part-time if they would prefer, the ability to flex their schedule if they need to arrive earlier to leave earlier, or arrive later to leave later, that's totally fine. Wouldn't that be nice if you had that, Tamara? Because...
I'm not twitching at all over here.
Oh, good times. Maria, who had been fired, is rehired and working part-time, sharing a shift with someone else. Yay!
And time is flying. 5 weeks have passed under Violet, Doralee, and Judy's, Mr. Hart's new progressive management, and it has not gone unnoticed. There's a mysterious gentleman with a notebook looking at all those memos of change and taking note of the new shades of paint that the office lockers are being painted. But there's bad news on the horizon for the terrific trio. Mr. Hart discovered a nail file that had eluded Doralee's initial sweep of the bathroom, where she removed all pointy sharp objects, so he gets to filing off his leather shackles. Meanwhile, Judy has been spending the night at Mr. Hart's house, being the one of the three that is not only single but also doesn't have dependents, and she's surprised when her ex-husband, who left her to live free and easy in Mexico with the secretary, comes a-knocking on Mr. Hart's door. He apologizes, letting her know that everything fell apart with the secretary only a mere week after he left her. Judy is trying to subtly get him to get rid of him, but he's just not leaving when she hears a crash from upstairs. Mr. Hart has finally freed one of his wrists from its shackle and accidentally whacked into the table lamp, knocking it over. Judy rushes upstairs in time to see Mr. Hart trying to use the file to disable the garage door opener device, but Judy isn't having it. She is not the same woman as she was when she started the job. She hits the garage door opener remote, which yanks him back up so he's suspended from the ceiling, much to Corinne's glee.
Yes.
She shoves the scarf in his mouth and quickly closes the door behind her, but her ex hears the commotion and comes upstairs after her. As soon as he sees the guy suspended from the ceiling, chains everywhere and a gag in his mouth, he slams the door shut, disgusted. "You know, I was going to do you a favor by asking you to come back to me, but now, oh, Judy, you've changed. You're into bondage?" Judy asks, "What's that?" And the ex replies, "Bondage, S&M, sex games." Judy nods her head. "Yep, that's me. I'm into all of that. Now get out of here." She starts pushing him towards the door when he asks, "Who is that anyway?" Judy answers, "My boss." And her ex is scandalized and can't even with that information. "You're having an affair with your boss? How typical." This really flips the switch in Judy, and hell hath no fury like this scorned woman. She shouts, "Just like you had an affair with your secretary?" Her ex begs, "Judy, this isn't you. You can't be serious." But Judy has the fire lit in her soul. "Don't you tell me what I can or can't do. Those days are over. And if I want to have an affair, play sex games, or do M&M, you can't stop me. As a matter of fact, I smoke pot. I've changed." Her ex scoffs. "I can see that, and not for the better." Judy continues ablaze with indignation. "As if. Your leaving was the best thing that ever happened to me." She throws the front door open. "Hit the road, Buster. This is where you get off."
Yay.
And he exits in confusion as she slams the door behind him and leans against it, basking in all her fiery glory, like a phoenix that has risen from the marijuana ashes.
That's right, kids. If you smoke marijuana, you too can get that kind of a gumption.
Mm-hmm. You can start having...
Yes, gaps in what you're thinking. Absolutely.
<Shut up>. Oh, God. I know what I'm trying to say. Hold on. Nope. Yep. Gumption. Gumption, gumption, gumption. All the gumption.
All the gumption. This next section I call The Shit Is About to Hit the Fan. It's Tuesday and the ladies are meeting in the break room, and Violet has great news. The invoices should be arriving on Friday. 3 more days and they can put all of this behind them. Just in time, too, as Roz is arriving on the following Monday. They are about to be in the clear. But are they? A cab pulls up to Mr. Hart's place and surprise! It's Mrs. Hart, back early from her cruise. She enters their bedroom and it's empty until Mr. Hart comes out of the bathroom brushing his teeth. He exclaims, "Missy!" And Missy looks at him puzzled. "Frank, what on earth are you up to?" But we don't see what he's up to. Dun, 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 dun. Instead, we cut to Missy, happily ensconced in a hotel room, calling Dora Lee at home. It's morning time and Dora Lee answers her phone, dressed in her robe. Missy effuses to Dora Lee, "I just want to thank you for those flowers you sent me on the cruise. I just realized it was you who sent them and not Frank. And while he said I should never call work, I'm guessing this should be fine since I'm calling you at home."
Yeah, sure.
Yes, Missy, that's exactly what he meant. Ugh. God love her. Dora Lee says, "Well, I did sign his name, but only because he asked me to." But Missy is insistent. "Oh, no. I asked him when I saw him, and he told me he didn't. That's why I came back early." Dora Lee interrupts. "Did you say you've come back?" Missy happily responds, "Oh, yes. 3 days ago, Frank sent me to a hotel for another week. He's trying a new exercise program out at the house. You should see what he's done to our bedroom." Missy would say more, but Dora Lee hung the fuck up on her and swiftly calls Violet, who is all full of, oh shit, and knows that Mr. Hart has played them. Violet quickly gets dressed and heads to the Ajax warehouse to check it out. When she gets there, she sees it's full and buzzing with forklifts. All of those glow-in-the-dark dildos, copies of Moby Dick in the shape of a whale, who knows what else. Dorley then calls Judy, who insists, Mr. Hart is all chained up like he has been. Everything is good. Dorley insists, get my gun and be very careful around him. I'm coming right over.
When Dorley enters the house, she calls Judy, and then she sees Judy being held at gunpoint by Mr. Hart. Judy says sheepishly, he found your gun. Mr. Hart holds Judy and Dorley at gunpoint, taking them back to the office. When they get inside the building, he's startled. Where's my time clock? Dorley simply states, we've made a few changes. They ride the elevator. When he enters their floor, his jaw drops. What the fuck? Instead of rows and rows of desks, there are now dividers, pops of orange, and a lounge area in the middle of the office. Who made all these changes? Who authorized this? Dorley says smugly, you did, Mr. Hart. It's your signature. He angrily asks, what are these people doing here? It's not even 9. Judy chimes in, you authorized another program called Flexible Hours. People set their own time. It's working really nicely. Dorley agrees, a lot fewer people are absent and people like it. Mr. Hart grumbles, do they? Well, I hate it. He hustles them into the office to call the police. Violet speeds into the office a short while later, picks up the invoices, and goes directly to Mr. Hart's office, flopping the paperwork down on the desk in front of him, stating, well, this is what we were waiting for, but you managed to get everything back into the warehouse. It's completely full. All the dildos, all the Moby Dick books, all the whales. So now what are you going to do with us? Mr. Hart responds, cost me a pretty penny to do all that. Now sit down. I'm going to send you 3 bitches to jail. He's about to call the po-po and zzz, zzz, his phone rings. He picks it up and it's his boss, Mr. Hinkle, telling him that the president of the board, Russell Tinsworthy, a man who looks like a cross between Colonel Sanders with a cowboy hat and Ted Nugent, is here to meet with him. Mr. Hart is freaking the fuck out. He grabs Violet by the shoulders and says to her desperately, you gotta stand by me. Violet rolls her eyes and follows him out the door with Dorley and Judy trailing behind. And before we know it, Russell Tinsworthy and his entourage is approaching Mr. Hart with a bottle of champagne and a firm handshake. I don't come up here very often, but my man Perkins, the mystery man from earlier who's been snooping around on the floor taking those notes, keeps an eye on things for me, and when I find a unit that shows a 20% rise in productivity over 6-week time, well, I want to meet the man who's responsible. But when he asks Mr. Hart about some of the programs that they've been instituting, Mr. Hart does nothing more than stammer and refer to Violet, who talks about the programs the women instituted. Violet takes Tinsworthy and the assorted management that is with him to the daycare center, and on their way over, Mr. Hart is stopped by a very effusive woman. Mr. Hart, it's so good to see you! Mr. Hart is confused. And who are you? She replies happily, it's me, Margaret Foster! Mr. Hart says with disdain, the old lush? Huh. She chipperly replies, that was me, but thanks to the company alcohol rehab program you started, those days are over, and I'll never forget those wonderful letters of encouragement you sent. Aww. She kisses him on the cheek and skips away, while Mr. Hart tries to process everything but simply can't. He makes his way to the daycare where an effusive Tinsworthy says, all of this is great, he whispers to him, but that equal pay stuff has got to go, and then raises his voice again. You're creative and get the job done. He claps Hart on the shoulders. I need a man like you in our new office in Brazil. You're going to love it down there and you'll get a handsome bonus. He walks Hart into the elevators. And after 2 to 3 years, you're never going to want to come back. The ladies look at each other gleefully as the elevator doors close on Tinsworthy and a very stunned and not too happy about moving to Brazil, Mr. Hart. Violet, Dorley, and Judy gather in Mr. Hart's office, popping that champagne that Tinsworthy brought and congratulating themselves. They got away with it. And it's just the beginning. They're emboldened and just wait to see what they're going to do next. Suddenly, a familiar face arrives back to work early from the language school. A very proud Roz announces herself, saying, Bonjour, Mr. Hart. And when she sees the 3 women drinking around Mr. Hart's desk, her face falls. Holy merde! And the women laugh because Roz is powerless without Hart. The screen goes black, except for the round cameos around the stars, and we get an update of what happens to each of them next. Violet was promoted to vice president, Judy married the Xerox rep, and Dorley quit her job and became a country singer, because of course she did. And Mr. Hart was abducted by a tribe of Amazons in the Brazilian jungle and was never heard from again. The end. Woo! Woo! Oh my goodness. What a ride, Corinne. How many dry kisses, even though there was no dry kisses in this whole movie, do you give 9 to 5?
I give this, in spite of its lack of diversity, which I would say, caveat, for the time,
mm-hmm.
and the kind of movie it was, It was diverse, but that's still very minimal.
Yep.
5 dry kisses. This movie is perfection. It is amazing. Although I guess it perhaps it's not perfection with some of the wardrobe, but Dolly Parton, Lily Tomlin, and
Jane Fonda
and Dabney Coleman were all pitch perfect. So was Roz. Uh-huh. So was whoever did casting for this movie should have gotten an Oscar, basically.
Uh-huh.
Whoever figured out the contraption that Dabney Coleman was in so that he multiple times was swinging from the ceiling. Love that as well. Should have gotten an Oscar as well. Just saying. So I delighted in this movie. I'm pretty sure this movie is what sparked my love of Dolly Parton. And and I love that song too. Totally should have won an Oscar. I give this 5 dry kisses. What about you?
5 dry kisses. I'm going to give this movie 4.5 dry kisses. I think it's pretty close to perfection for the time, especially. The one thing that just kind of made me drop it down a little bit is some of those more complicated bits that are often glossed over in like 80s type movies. Like at the end, they're like, we got away with it. I'm like, you don't really think that Mr. Hart's going to get down into his house and still call the cops on you bitches and still have you arrested, even though he's going to Brazil?
Well, he can't, because if he does that, then he can't take claim for any of the changes that he made at work, the changes that everybody loves so much that he needs to take credit for. So
I still see him being like a fiery asshole and being like, all you bitches are fired. I can't send you to jail. So fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. Get out of the building and taking away all these initiatives, because who cares? He already got the promotion and the trip to Brazil or whatever, even though he doesn't want to go. It's all those lovely little loose ends that are always just tied up so perfectly at the end in the 80s movies that I'm just like, just half. Okay, you convinced me. I'll go 5 dry kisses too. Corinne explained it. I was watching it at midnight last night. So, but I really do like this movie. And it was actually, I think this screenplay, I was telling Corinne that after I watched this, I went down into a Jane Fonda, Dolly Parton, and Lily Tomlin rabbit hole.
As well one should.
As well one should, exactly. And the movie 9 to 5, the script was adapted, I think, somewhat by Jane Fonda. She got the idea from her friend that ran an organization that tried to integrate women into the workforce, much like the beginning of this movie. And Jane Fonda sat in on one of their meetings, and she said that the stories that they told were just like horrendous and probably pretty close to what happened in the actual movie. And so she wanted to make it. And then at first it was kind of coming out like a, oh my God, you're never going to believe how shitty women have it in the work world.
Yeah.
But then it slowly morphed into a comedy, and more so when she got Lily Tomlin on board after she saw Lily Tomlin's one woman show. And then after she got Lily Tomlin on, or the idea to get Lily Tomlin, she also wanted to get Dolly Parton, and that was like her dream team. And she literally spent like a year trying to recruit both of them onto the movie. So they were her first choices.
Aww.
And if she didn't get Lily Tomlin, she was looking at Carol Burnett. And if she didn't get Dolly Parton, she got this other like 60 siren whose name escapes me right now. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they truly are the dream team. And I think they both like are just chef's kiss and perfection in each of their roles. And this movie was just a lot of fun, especially for the time. It's humorous. It's got a great message. Like, sadly, things haven't progressed as much as we'd like them to, like they did in the movie.
Yeah.
But things have changed. And it's so nice to kind of watch something like this and be like, boy, how far have we come? Some of us further than others.
Thank goodness they got rid of those floppy bows for ties. Yes.
Pussy bows. That's what they call them. Pussy bows. Why? I do not know.
Are you serious?
I heard. Yes. Google pussy bows and see if that's what comes up. I promise you.
Pussies deserve better than that.
Somebody said, oh, that lady with their pussy bow. And I'm like, exactly what you're talking about, ma'am. And then I saw one and I'm like, are you serious? Is that what they call them?
A style of neckwear worn with women and girls' blouses and bodices. It is a bow tied at the neck. Oh, my freaking goodness, Wikipedia. What the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yep.
That is interesting.
Yes.
I guess it was originally called a pussycat bow.
Because that makes more sense?
Uh-huh. Totally.
They, you tie a bow like that around your pussycat?
Uh-huh. Sure.
Yeah. Anyways, so yeah.
There's always been something subtly subversive about the pussy bow and that it evokes defiance.
No, it doesn't.
Historically, it's associated with women who are starting to invade male spaces, the golf course, the workplace, and challenge traditional dress codes. The pussy bow blouse is often paired with trousers. Trousers. Those are pants.
Why don't they call them pussy bows then? Why don't they call them like bitch ass bows? Like,
I definitely think bitch ass bows. I think we're putting a new entry on Wikipedia. It's going to be
right.
Bitch ass bows. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Fiery female bows, like anything but pussy bows. Like, the one thing that differentiates us from men, of course, is our pussy. So let's just make it out there loud and proud. Anytime there's something different between us and those guys.
Yay!
You have your ties, we have our pussy bows. Why? Because we're invading your work world.
Thank goodness.
Oh, the pussy bows of it all.
Thanks for that. The more you know moment, Tamara.
I know. When you said those floppy bows at the beginning, I'm like, oh my God, does she not know? Does she not know the horror of what they're called?
Did not. Did not at all.
Yep. Yep. Whoa. Found out recently, was also just as appalled as you. What? They are not called pussy. Oh, yes, they are.
Wow. How, when did you find that out? Whoa. That's,
I can't remember. It was like a distinctly in a movie and they said it like four or five times, whoa, which was like allowed me no room for confusion because they're like, oh, she was wearing a shirt with a pussy bow. And I'm like, huh? And then later on in the movie, and her pussy bow shirt. And I'm like, oh, so like after three times, I'm like, okay, they either really like this name or they're like fucking with me or it's actually called a pussy bow. And it was actually called a pussy bow.
Wow. Oh, so Tamara, what do we have coming up next week? Not a movie that's hopefully not a documentary on pussy bows, right?
It's actually pussy bows throughout the years, then and now. I'm just kidding. It is. We are going to do the lovely movie on Netflix called Dumplin'.
Oh, yay. Love the book. Love the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Love the second book in the series. Love it all.
Puddin'. I think it was called Puddin'.
Yes. Puddin' is the second one. Mm-hmm. And then there's a third one, too, that I haven't read. We need
it's called Lemon Meringue Pie.
We need to get Julie, whatever her name is, on the podcast to talk about Dumplin'.
Julie.
The author of Dumplin'.
Oh my gosh. You have this arsenal of people that you just want to put on the podcast. And I'm like, oh, sure, we'll get Lily Tomlin and Dolly Parton and all these people. Someday, Corinne.
Julie
someday.
Murphy. Julie Murphy. Of course. I am so excited about Dumplin'. And also, fucking Dolly Parton features heavily in the movie Dumplin'.
She does. Oh my God. Is it Dolly Parton month? Did we fuck around and have a Dolly Parton accidental theme month?
We have at least half of a Dolly Parton themed month. Yes, absolutely.
That's kind of cool. If we're going to have a month around one specific person, that's a good person to have it around.
I know. Well, I still think, I mean, there's a few other Dolly Parton movies that I would love to do. So if you have an interest in us having a Dolly Parton month or any thoughts on pussy bows or 9 to 5 or Dumplin', you can reach out to us at onedrykiss@gmail.com or you can find us on the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss.
And that is one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you can find the time to rate and review us anywhere you listen to this podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it. And as always, we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah! See you next time.
See you next time. His butt was stuck to the chair. She peeled it off, off.
I can tell I'm getting tired. When I'm getting tired. Unique New York. Unique New York. Unique New York.